Hello and welcome everyone to a brand new English episode of the Conscious Junkie podcast show. Oh man, I'm really stoked to have you here all again because it's been a while since the latest English episode. But thank you so much for your patience and welcome back in the show. I'm also pretty pumped that today's guest will make it worth the waiting time because really her resume is inspiring and impressive. The lady waiting on the other side of the Skype line is a New York Times bestselling celebrity ghostwriter and journalist whose work has appeared in the New York Post, the Oprah Magazine, and the Wall Street Journal. She describes herself as an obsessive information seeker, question asker, idea machine, and storyteller. She has spent 15 years in television news, has written about health, wine, and completing the New York Marathon. And we seem to have quite some hobbies in common too, as my guest loves to do yoga, go for big walks, and travel. I feel like we could talk forever, but let's just see where the conversation brings us. Without further ado, I bring to the show Stephanie Krikorian.
It's great to be here.
Yes, and you know what? I just try to sort of sum up all the great things you've done and experienced, did not mention your latest very exciting achievement, which is the come out of your first solo book, Zen Bender.
Yes, that just came out, I guess about a month ago, and after writing 20 books for other people, I bravely and maybe, you know, not so a little crazy, I wrote my own book, and so it's called Zen Bender, a decade-long quest to fix everything that was never broken. So that's out now.
Yes.
It feels weird to have my own book.
Yeah, it must be. I mean, was it always a dream or did it sort of happen?
I don't think it was always a dream. I think I spent so much time writing other people's books, but they always had something to say, and I really wasn't sure I had anything to say. You know, big memoirs and things like that are generally based on something maybe tragic or overcoming some big hurdles, and I always thought, well, I was never kidnapped or anything, so who wants to hear anything I have to say? And I got to thinking, very organically, I had lost my job in 2008 in television, and that's when I started ghostwriting. And then I, you know, started reading self-help books for research for other people's projects. And then I kind of went next level and started hiring coaches and gurus. I suddenly had more time on my hands in terms of flexibility. So same amount of time, but I worked during the day, but I had flexibility to sort of take on all these other projects, and I could go work from Los Angeles where it's like guru ground zero. So I got into all these numerologists and coaches and all these sorts of things. And so as I was heading toward my 50th birthday, and I kind of realized I've been doing this Zen Bender for a decade, and there were a lot of funny stories that kind of happened along the way, and I wrote a book proposal talking about it. It wasn't really, you know, a plan, like, what should I write about it? This is, you know, so crazy. But I did it, and then my agent took it out, and we got a little book deal, and I was like, oh gosh, now I have to write a book. So it kind of happened like that.
Yeah, like the other way around. You were first like, oh hey, and then it all started to happen, really.
Yeah, it was really weird. Definitely a strange thing, and I had been through it so many times with clients that I work with, wrote their proposals and told them how, you know, it's very hard to sell a book and the rejections come first and don't feel bad. But in this kind of concept of the doctors make the worst patients, I think the ghostwriters make the worst authors, because I didn't take any of the advice I'd given to all these people. I reacted just like them. There were tears, you know, it's so funny to have experienced from the other side now. So it's been an interesting journey.
So interesting. And I'm just wondering, like, was writing the book as funny as reading it?
I knew, so it's funny because I knew, I guess you can look at it this way. When I had other people read it and they would say, oh, it's so funny, you know, I laughed out loud when I was trying to get it in good shape. I gave, you know, sent it out to some other writers. And I remember thinking, and I realize I've done this with my own clients, where I'm like, oh, this is really good, or this is really smart. And this may sound, I say this as, with as much humility as I can, I know what's funny already. Tell me what's wrong with it. You know, that was kind of my interesting thing. I know the funny parts. Where are the holes in this project? And I thought that was kind of interesting that I had for so often given the accolades to everybody, and especially in notes in the column, like, oh, laugh out loud, this is funny. And so that was interesting because I knew there was funny part. I knew it had funny parts. What I didn't know when I set out was just to write a humor book was that I was going to do a little more of a deep dive, and I was going to uncover some things that I didn't know I wanted to talk about or share. And I still cringe a little at, you know, I listened to some of it back on the audio tape that the publisher put out, and I was like, you know, I can't believe I said that. I'm not one to really talk about myself because I, you know, listen to other people talk and then I write their books. You know, I interview them, and that's all one-sided when that happens. And so it's very strange to talk about myself. And it was very strange that in between all the funny parts, I really dropped a few things and had a few revelations and realizations that I completely was blindsided by myself.
Yeah, isn't that just so interesting how writing does that?
It's very strange because, you know, you just don't see it coming. And I think some of the people who read it who did say, well, how did you feel when this happened? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Does anyone care how I felt? And they were like, yeah, we want to know what it felt like when somebody said this. And, you know, it's too...
Can you call an example here? Like one of the things that people were really like curious about, one of the events or one of the experiences you mentioned in the book?
Yeah, sure. I mean, early on, this idea, I guess I really didn't think about... I knew I was upset when I lost my job. I knew that that was kind of a bummer. And I knew that I had been feeling like just sort of at a loss because that never happened. That was sort of ground moving for me where I'm like, wow, I'm unemployed. I'm one of those unemployed people now and I never really thought I would be. And in writing, I kind of just went, and then I lost my job and then I started ghostwriting. And my friend Sherry Rifkin, I had mentioned the fact that people were sort of, oh, you'll be fine, or this will be the best thing that ever happened to you. And that, she's like, well, how did that make you feel? I'm like, that bothered me a lot that they couldn't give me 20 seconds to say, this is a big bummer. I'm sorry, this sucks. And again, I don't, you know, as I tried to say to her, but it's not like I wasn't sick. I wasn't dying because I didn't lose somebody. I just lost my job. But there were feelings involved in that. And I guess that was interesting for me to put out there. And I think the other chapter I cringe a little about, I mean, I cringe a lot about, is the dating chapter. Because I feel like I started to talk a lot about, I made it a little bit of a joke in the beginning that, you know, dating when you're in your 40s is a little bit like shopping at places like Marshall's and TJ Maxx, these second stores, these factory outlet type stores, where everything's already picked over, you know, the inventory is low, you're taking something, not because you love it, but because it's the only thing left.
Yes.
And so that was interesting, but then as I sort of got into that chapter, I started realizing one thing that always bothered me is no matter what I accomplished in my career or where I lived or what I did, everybody always, that I hadn't seen in a while, ended the conversation with, but have you met anybody yet? And so if you ask single people at my age before, which I have many friends who are highly accomplished and single, that there is that judginess, and I didn't really know that I wanted to get into that, and it wasn't really Zen bendering, you know, in the true sense, in the same way like the diet chapter is. But that made me cringe a little. It still makes me cringe a little because it got into a little bit of my, you know, a lot of my online dating experiences.
And quite personal, right? Yeah.
It got very personal, yeah. And I think, so that was a little weird, and I think the chapter on my weight, I've never discussed my weight before, and again, put in perspective, I know other people have it harder, and I'm, you know, don't want to, you know, we could all lose a few pounds, I imagine everybody feels that way, so not to suggest, you know, whatever, that it's like
mm-hmm.
a major crisis, but I would like my middle to be a little thinner and a little smaller, and so the weight chapter was interesting too, but I think one thing that came from that is I felt a little more comfortable posting pictures of myself where it wasn't this illusion of like just head and shoulders where I'm like, okay, everybody's got a belly or some curves. Mm-hmm. I'm going to throw it out there. So that was something that was interesting because I never did that before.
Cool. Yeah. So you think that writing about this, like from your own perspective, you think that that was maybe one of the biggest healing practices of all?
Writing about everything in general or just the weight?
No, in general, like your whole...
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, yeah, that's a good point because it is a book about letting go and I had to let go of a lot of things. And so that was very interesting. I guess that's, I've never thought of it in that way that of all the things I tried, maybe sitting down and putting them all on paper was actually part of the process. And so, and it's funny because I still, you know, I think if you ask anybody who's written anything, fiction, nonfiction, whatever, you cringe a little or you don't sleep the night before, you worry people are going to judge you, but kind of letting it go and letting it be out there in the universe and all of that. I think it was, yeah, maybe it was the cherry on top of the sundae, the final step in this process of finding some zen and not much matters. But, you know, it also, I guess, is a reminder that, you know, someone said, how do you ultimately find your zen recently? And I said, well, I think it's a lifelong process that never ends. It's like you just keep going and there's not going to be punctuation on the end of this sentence. Every day is going to be a challenge, you know?
That's the whole point. Like, I mean, I'm 29 now, but there were quite some moments that I thought I figured it all out. And then right at that moment, I mean, yeah, it's a lifelong journey, I guess.
It really is. It's a marathon, you know? Every single day there's going to be a bump in the road. And I guess if you think of it at all, we're all sort of, I think I did the lot too, is we're all looking for that destination, you know? We want that map.
Yeah.
To somewhere, but we really don't know where that is, nor should we, you know. Just I feel like we spend so much time chasing something like what is success or what does this look like.
Totally.
It's every day it's going to be different, and you're never going to arrive, you know.
No.
You're always going to be working, I think.
That's it, and I think that's the beauty of it. And it's such a cliche, but it's true that it's not about the destination, but it's about the path and who you meet along the way and what you experience and what you feel. And really, I think that's what life is about, and we should continue to remind ourselves and each other that it's okay.
It's all okay. And also that, you know, I think we get caught up in the illusion of what everybody else is doing in a day and what everybody else is...
Or comparing and everything like that. Yeah, totally. And I imagine that...
struggling.
And in New York, I imagine that the pressure is on.
You know, I think it is. I think it's... There's, you know, New York's expensive and, you know, everybody looks great and everybody has great clothes. So it's a high-pressure place, I suppose. But I think more than New York putting pressure on people, it's our, we put it on ourselves. I think that all comes from inside, because you know, I don't think I like run with a crowd that is, you know, puts that kind of pressure. Sometimes maybe, you know, I guess a little bit, but I think we do it to ourselves. And so I think you got to figure out how to be where you want to be and be who you want to be and not worry about what other people are doing. It's like yoga, you know, what do they tell you? Just keep your eye on your own mat. I think that's a metaphor for all of life, you know, just stay on your mat, worry about your own practice.
That's a good one.
Yeah, don't look at what everybody else is doing and just keep your own, you know, keep your own path or your own way of doing things.
Totally, yeah. And I just wonder, Stephanie, I think it's very interesting, you being a ghostwriter. Now, you probably know that yoga is about removing the ego and, you know, just sort of coming through your true self. And me thinking of you being a ghostwriter, you should not have a very big ego, because you're constantly helping and supporting other writers and celebrities to sort of achieve their goals. Where in fact, probably you are doing it most of the time, or I don't know how it works exactly, but how was it for you?
Yeah, it's interesting, because before that, I was a television producer who would write scripts for reporters and anchors, and so it's kind of the same thing, just in a different, packaging it in a different format. And it's funny, I did have one client who got some notes back on the project and said something like, you know, I hope this doesn't bruise your ego, but here are some notes on this. And it was funny because I said, I don't have any ego in this. I want to make this great for you.
Yeah.
My ego's not bruised. And I don't think I ever felt, you know, oh, I wish that was, I was a part of that excitement. I want them to do well. It's their, you know, life body of work or their story, and I just want to make it the best for them because that's what they're paying me to do. And so in that sense, there's ego of, gosh, don't screw this up, make this great for them. And it's a little anticlimactic because, you know, you work so hard with somebody for, it could be years you're connected to somebody by the time you sell a book to the time the book is published. And I just want, you know, I just want it to be great for them. And I take that responsibility very seriously. And, but I don't, it's, sometimes I don't even, you know, I don't go to the book launch or anything like that. I'm, you know, I'm just sort of in and out and then I'm done. And, It is an interesting
relationship. It is so strange to me. Like, I can imagine that excitement and then the book is out. So then, but you're sort of, well, not missing that. But for me, it feels like you're not getting the acknowledgement you should. But of course, for you, it must be different because you did 20 or more books.
Yeah, it is. It's, but you know, someone, it sounds crass, but everyone says, don't you feel bad that you're not, your name's on, like, no, as long as I get the check, I'm very happy to be paid to do it. And it is kind of very fortunate because making a living as a writer is very hard. And so this allows me both to write and earn a living and then do some other projects on my own that kind of feed that ego, if that's what it is.
Yeah.
You know, I write articles or I do books or I, you know, come up with projects. And it actually, it's a revenue stream that allows me to do something else because I don't know, it's very hard to make a living writing your own books for a million reasons, or just writing articles, especially with the new digital, you know, online world.
Tell me about it.
The writers are you know, ripped off on a daily basis. It's you know, I've done things back years and years ago for $50 that would be almost like, you know, a day of work. It's unbelievable. And I remember when I got laid off and then I found a job and then I had gotten some traction with the projects and I was quitting my job and I told my accountant and he's like, don't do it, Stephanie. The worst, lowest tax returns are teachers and writers. You're gonna go broke. So, you know, it's fine. I can check my ego to pay my bills and then be allowed to give me the freedom and flexibility to do some other things along the way.
Yeah, it's nice. You should look at this. If this is your reality, you should. But I was just wondering, like, how would it be for her? Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's totally fine. And I think anybody who has any kind of creative pursuit, you know, and maybe it's just the practical side of me, you still need to pay the bills. You still need to have a revenue stream that keeps you going. And
absolutely.
You can't go broke, whether it's painting or, you know, whatever it is, you can't go down with the ship. And so I think I learned, I guess that's just sort of in me. I'm a, you know, I'm a worker, I'm single, no one's paying my bills. And so I'm going to pay them in the way that I can, and then I'm going to do the other stuff on my own. And I think everyone has to think about that, because that's the sad reality of the world. Art requires,
totally.
You gotta pay your bills.
Yeah, we have to. Hey, and now you're sort of arriving on your own party. Now you are that person in the spotlights on the back of your own book, you know. Is it weird?
It is weird. But, you know, I found, like, when I'm actually in the book signings and readings or doing things like this, which are great, it is really fun to do. And I feel comfortable doing all of that. It's the lead up to it where you have to, you know, pitch yourself or promote yourself. That's very strange to me because I've sort of been kind of an understated, you know, promoter of myself, and it feels weird to ask people for things. But I think that's an interesting exercise as well. And I, you know, when somebody, I've gotten emails from strangers asking questions or congratulating me on the book, and I try to take 10 minutes even to talk to people if they need, you know, some help, because I know how hard it is to ask for help. It's very hard to say, hey, you know, is there a collaboration we could do to promote the book? And it's so awkward and so uncomfortable. And that's really been the hard part for me, which was also the hard part when I lost my job, is like, oh my God, I've got to call everybody I know in television and ask for an interview. But the interesting thing was every single person was happy to oblige, and was in a position to. And almost the same for the book. It's kind of been an interesting observation. There have been some really unexpected, amazing
collaborations, connections. Yeah, how amazing.
Or just people from 20 years ago who were gracious enough to put my book cover up on their social media feed because they are of note, who came out. And that's been interesting to see who has been very open to that. And I think it's actually been kind of cool because it's not just, you know, women helping women. It's actually men that I worked with a very long time ago who this book would probably not normally be on their reading list, who took the time to put out a message and congratulate me on Facebook and use their kind of clout to promote. And women who were happy to, you know, have me in to do something or host a little party for me. And that's been really, really
heart fluttering. Yes. That's amazing. Really cool. Yeah. It's strange. Have you read me Mariana's Powers book, Help Me?
Yes, I did, and it's very similar. And I will say, I almost made that part of the book because, you know, I started getting texts the day she was on the Today Show, and I actually was like, oh my God, she scooped me. She beat me to the punch. Because it's very similar, it's also very different, fortunately, and she was gracious enough to blurb the book for me, which was very nice. But she did a very clever job of, you know, taking a year's worth of 1 month at a time self-help books and seeing how they apply to her life. And very, very funny book. And so, yeah, that was funny. And also, I'm like, I was just kind of finishing up the ending of my book. And at first, I was finessing that in as like, there's another lesson. There's another let it go, you know.
So, yeah. I think the two of you will be great friends.
I bet. I'd love to meet her someday. She was really, really lovely and generous with her blurb and taking the time to read my book. And I really, again, with people helping people, it's
oh, so, you know, it's amazing.
People are nice, you know?
People are nice. Yeah. We should keep that in mind, really. People are nice. We tend to be so on ourselves. And that's one of the things that you mentioned in your book. It's all about you at some point if it comes to the self-help and this, all these things. You're thinking way too much about yourself and you just lose the bigger picture and you're too focused on yourself, and that's not good for anyone.
It's so true. And I find part of the problem as you dive into all these self-help and you become so self-absorbed. And, you know, as I wrote about in there, everything's not about you. So remember, when somebody doesn't phone you back or you don't get, you know, look for something that you need, it might not be about you. Maybe they had an emergency and maybe something else went wrong. But when you start on this road of always trying to fix every single thing, you become a little self-absorbed. And so in the back of the book, I give a long list of things that are kind of unrelated to self-help that can actually make you feel great. Like, go dig up a potato at the farm, because that is super gratifying.
Yes.
Get your hair blown out at the dry bar.
Get over yourself.
And get over yourself, because go volunteer and help someone, you know, who's really struggling with something, and do something great for them, because you'll feel great about yourself doing that. And so I think there are many, many ways to do this without just always thinking about yourself. And I think we really, everything feeds into that. Not just the self-help screaming your name that I kind of fell victim to. Well, if all these fixes are out there, surely I must be broken in my mind, body, and soul. But an Instagram is very geared toward, look at me. And, you know, it's weird when you just like, how many pictures of yourself looking fabulous do you post? But it's, unfortunately, it's all kind of this vicious cycle of, that's how people make money now, or that's how you sell a book, or that's what the publishers look for. How many Twitter followers do you have?
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
It's crazy. Hey, and Stephanie, if you could say one thing to the people who are in the midst of this whole self-help thing, is there one thing you would say to them?
You're good enough already. You really are good enough already. And I think if you can start going for a walk every day, or just start I used to think success would be measured when every single big thing happened in my life. So when my career was great, when I was married, when I, you know, had the house I had to have, that every single thing, that was success. That was the finish line. But I would say to people, find the joy in the little things. Like, I got up this morning and I drank the most delicious cup of coffee sitting on my couch. And that is success, that you can find joy in that. When I sit outside and the breeze hits my face, nothing makes me happier than a good breeze. And so these tiny little things are actually success. And and happiness and all of that, and they're cumulative. They add up to being great. And so the finish line isn't every single great thing happening all at once, and until it all happens, nothing's complete. Life is complete when you have a great cup of coffee and you're in a good mood and you've got a whole day ahead of you, and so you've got it all in you, you know, and you're good enough already, so don't listen to everyone telling you what you need to fix, because it's probably okay already.
Yeah, that I resonate with that so much. Instead of looking to all the things that need to be fixed, what are the things we are grateful for in this very moment? What is exciting now? What is, yeah, you know, it's so exactly. Important.
Exactly, yeah. And also, you know, I still love to do all these things. I still took a class recently on finding my spirit guide, and I tried Tai Chi, and I think, great, keep at it. Read the books, but take only a tiny thread from each one.
Yeah.
And you don't cede power to any, you know, one, you know, guru or coach or anything like that. Just take a tiny thread and embrace it when it's done. You know, if you Marie Kondo your house, which I did, including my freezer, great, do
yeah.
it. And then move on and just take whatever tiny little bit you got from that, instead of really, people live and die by these books, and then they become super preachy, and then they become obsessed with them.
Yeah.
And make it fun. If there's a placebo effect, that's super great.
Yeah. If it's real, also fine. Yeah. But don't like make it your every and only thing.
Exactly.
Mm.
Exactly.
So
you don't want to give anyone else that power.
Nay, that's, yeah, I think so too. And if it comes to like the tools and practices that you tried, I mean, lots you've tried and experienced, what is the very best thing that you're like, oh, this everyone should do or try this?
I would say two things. One is the freebie, which is walking, 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 and walking. And secondly is, I love acupuncture still. Acupuncture, yoga, and Reiki are great. I have no problem with those. I like acupuncture preventatively, and I think maybe that's something that's important too, preventatively. Like, do yoga not when your back's sore, just go do it anyway. Do it preventatively.
Yeah.
Do Reiki before you hit the crisis and you're having a meltdown, and do acupuncture as often as you can afford to, as preventative.
Yeah. Maintenance, basically.
Yeah, maintenance, exactly. Mm. That's the way to put it.
Nice. And is there something that you're like, this is so ridiculous?
Well, it's not a practice so much, but one of the very early things that happened when I started, I hired a dating coach and I went to a dating seminar and I signed up for all the online dating, and my friend Sarah and I went to this dating seminar on why you're single, and one of the first things they told us was to make sure your hair is long and shiny, because shiny hair says fertile, and if you're fertile, someone will marry you.
Oh my lord. Yeah, I read that, man. That's crazy.
It's insane and it's offensive. But the funny thing with that is I still left that day. We got up and left because we were like, okay, this is Looney Tunes.
Too much, man.
But then I got thinking, but my hair is very shiny. So, what else must be wrong with me? So they get in your head.
Yeah.
You can't let these people get in your head.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's scary. I mean, for vulnerable people it's pretty scary, man.
That's crazy. Yeah. So things like that I thought were hilarious. And, you know, just things that you, as I say, you know, do something, but never pay for the 5-pack. Because when you pay for the 5-pack, once you went to this one healer and I got so caught up in it because I, you know, was so wowed by what happened, I immediately went to the bank and took out a big brick of cash and signed up for the 5-pack. And I think that's one thing not to do, is do one thing, walk away, give it a week, wait till you see how you feel, if the effects are long-lasting.
Yeah.
Then, you know, maybe try it again. But to get caught up in these moments where they're like, oh my God, I heard what happened to this woman when she did the 5-pack. Here's all my money.
Do not overdo it.
No.
No, moderation is key in this one.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. And, yeah, very nice. Stephanie?
Yes?
I want to just throw it sort of over another angle. Part of this podcast is the Human as Fuck quiz. And I think you've proved to be human with your book. I mean, it's amazing and it's honest and it's sincere and it's raw and it's real. But this is just going to be a bunch of questions fired at you.
Okay.
And the thing is that you have to answer quick as you can. Okay, can you do that?
I sure can.
All right, get ready. Straighten your spine and here we go. Do you smoke?
No.
Do you drink alcohol?
Yeah. Yes.
How many glasses on average a week?
4.
Top 3 of your favorite books.
Top 3 favorite books. The Confidence Code for nonfiction, Bel Canto for fiction, and recently Where the Crawdads Sing.
Mm-hmm. Then, favorite spot in the world?
On the beach in East Hampton.
Nice. Home is where the heart is. And then, what makes you feel relaxed?
Walking.
Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
What do you hate?
Cats.
Fair enough. And then plain Jane or rather some makeup?
Plain Jane.
Saddest moment in your life?
Saddest moment in my life. I'm kind of worried I haven't experienced it yet, so I don't know that answer.
Thankfully then. All right. When was the last time that you blew your own mind?
When was the last time I blew my own mind? Oh, I would say I was very excited when I wrote the first column for the New York Post, because I got to do some columns this summer on the Hamptons, and that was a moment for me.
Cool, yeah. What brings the worst out of you?
Oh, being tired.
And then best thing about living in New York City?
Oh, every single thing. The vibe, the people, the hustle bustle, the nonstop. I could go on. I love New York City.
So how then, is there a worst thing about living there?
Every single thing. The highs are high and the lows are low. So,
good one.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you have for breakfast?
Coffee with half and half as soon as I wake up. And usually like scrambled eggs and some fruit.
Mm-hmm, nice. And then favorite yoga pose?
Oh, half moon.
Okay. Sleeping or eating?
Eating.
Who's your best friend?
Oh, I would say my friend Sherry is one of my best friends. My friend Lori is one of my best friends.
A few more to go. Are you a jealous person?
No.
Mornings or evenings?
Mornings.
What do you regret?
Not using a mouth guard earlier when the dentist told me to. For grinding my teeth.
You're so dry. Flowers or trees? We've got 3 more.
Trees.
Kisses or cuddles?
Cuddles.
Mantra of the day?
Mantra of the day, never, never, never quit.
That's
somebody else's mantra, but I have it posted on my desk.
Never, ever, ever quit. Okay, and then Stephanie, where does the world need more of?
Love.
Love. Love, love, love. Easy, huh? It's actually easy. And everyone says so, love. So why not just all love a little bit more?
Kindness, peace. This could go on.
The list could go on. Kind things. Yeah. Kind people.
Just be kind.
Good. So you did very well, man. That was quick. Like the first thing. And so confident in all that you said.
Like, almost.
Like straight up.
Stumped, but I think it was good. That was fun.
Nice. So there's 2 more things which I would love for you to just sort of answer. The book, will it be out in other languages too, you reckon?
Oh, I don't know. I can ask the publisher. I have no idea.
Yeah, because you know what's funny? Marianne's book was first out in Holland. First, it came out in Dutch before it was out in English. Don't you think
that's... Are you kidding?
Yeah, really. Isn't it funny?
That is funny. Yeah, I've seen her posting things that every time it lands in a different language. I think it all just depends on sales and how well it does. And when they get a boost in a certain country, I'm not sure how that all works, but I'll find out.
Yeah, nice. I think my yoga friends will like it for sure.
Very cool.
So, for the ones who haven't read the book, why should they totally read it?
I would say 2 reasons. Because it will make you laugh and because it's very relatable. You will see yourself in the pages.
Yes, that's it. And I think that's what we need more of. And that's what the exact reason why I started this podcast in the first place, just to show that it doesn't have to be all picture perfect, but that we can learn and connect so much more if it's like real, if we're honest and if we just dare to be a bit more vulnerable and like real sharing instead of all this muck schmuck, perfect picture, everything.
Exactly. We're not alone. You're not alone. Nobody's alone. I think that's why books, self-help books in general, do well, because there's a group project aspect to it. And so that's kind of my hope with this. I want you to laugh, but I want you to realize you probably had a gateway drug called the vision board as well. So
yeah,
we all do.
Okay. Now, Stephanie, the very last question, something. I'm going to New York in January.
Yep.
Very excited about it. I've been there a couple of times before, but it's been a while. And now, what is the most conscious thing that I should totally do there? A recommendation. If it comes to like visiting a yoga place, or what would you recommend?
Oh, I'd have to give you a long list of restaurants to try. I always love the food in New York. I feel like it's like nowhere else. I would say go for a walk in Central Park. That's amazing. If you really have time, do the 6 mile loop. It takes you an hour. Maybe take 2 hours. That's amazing. What else? That's like one of my favorite things to do in New York. Go to the museums. There's so much art to see and so many great exhibits. And
would you recommend a yoga studio?
Yes. So my one that I go to just did close, but she's trying to start up again somewhere. Lisa Zaloga is my yoga instructor, and she's on the Upper West Side.
All right, cool.
I'd have to dig that up for you, yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. And then if it comes to something junky, like the best bar, where you should totally get a wine, a beer, or a cocktail, or all of it.
Well, I always like Jane Street Tavern. They have the best burger. I don't know if you call itself junky, but it's one of those dark bars that smells like a bar. that's good. McSorley's is like the first bar ever, and that's just way out there. I haven't been there in a long time, but you might want to go there for a beer. But I'm more of a wine bar person myself, so anywhere I can get a nice glass of wine is for me.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I can see that from the cover of your book.
Exactly.
Looking all yogi and winey. Very nice. Looks like my kind of party.
Well, look me up when you're in New York. I'd love to say hello.
Yeah, that would be so nice. That would be so nice. But I mean, it's great that we could be in touch in this way. And I hope that many, many people will grab up the book and read it.
It's on Amazon and available at booksellers also.
Yes, and we Dutchies are pretty okay with English, so that would be no problem.
Excellent.
Hey, it's a nice Christmas present too. Now that it's Christmas.
It's a little stocking stuffer size too.
Yeah, fantastic. Stephanie, if people want to know more, where can they find you? Do you have a website?
I do have a website. It's my name, which is very long, Stephanie, Stephanie, Krikorian, Krikorian.com, or on Instagram at Steffi Krik, Stephiekrik, and the same for Twitter.
All right, fantastic. And are you still on sort of a book tour?
Yeah, I have another signing coming up in Santa Barbara, and then there'll be a few more after that. I just did Mystic, Connecticut, New York City, and I did the Hamptons. And then I'm gonna, it's a lot, but I'm getting it going. But I'm going to Marjoram Wines in Santa Barbara on October 19th, and that's gonna be a lot of fun because there'll be wine and they're lovely people. And so that should be good.
Very nice. I want to thank you so much for being in the podcast, for sharing about your book, your life, your career, everything.
That was fun.
And thank you also, guys, so much for listening. Make sure to like and review the podcast, and make sure you get in touch with Stephanie and to buy her book, Zen Bender, if you want to laugh and cry and learn and love.